We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hello, and welcome back to Her Hoop Stats Unplugged. As always, you're here with Megan Gower, and today we are talking about all things SEC leading up to the 2022-2023 NCAA season. To go through the SEC, I went straight to the experts, so we are talking to Emily Adams, who's on the South Carolina beat, and Cora Hall on the Tennessee beat. In this episode, really deep diving on the top two teams in the SEC, and then chatting about what that top tier looks like, some of the other teams and players we're all excited to watch this season in the SEC. So really excited to get into it with both of them. To start us off, I am here with Emily Adams, the South Carolina women's basketball reporter for the Greenville News. Hey, Emily, how's it going?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for hopping on. I mean, I feel like we couldn't go through preseason without talking a lot about South Carolina this season. It would be the wrong thing to do. So I'm very excited to have expert on here.
It's they're almost the same team they were last year. So it's hard to ignore.
Exactly. Reigning national champions, picked number one unanimously in the AP poll, number one to finish in the SEC. Obviously, I mean, like you said, no real surprises there, but definitely a team we're going to be talking a lot about, I think, as we talk about the national championship picture for 2023.
Yeah, for sure.
Of course, at the center of that is Aaliyah Boston, who I would say is also everyone's favorite for National Player of the Year. So we can just keep rattling off things that South Carolina is going to be up for this year, but maybe just starting with her, I mean, she averaged over 16 and 12 last year, but kind of what have you heard from her or coach about, you know, the way her game's even grown for this season to make them even better?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, she's had kind of an interesting start to the season with, she was away for most of the beginning of preseason with USA Basketball prepping for the World Cup over in Sydney, which she didn't end up traveling with the team to that, but she was there for all of their training camp and all that. And so I think that in some ways was hard just because she was away from the team and away from, you know, being able to get ready for the college season. But I also think it was good in a lot of ways just because, you know, she was the only college player at USA camp. I think it was good for her to, you know, get a taste of what like the W game looks like and, you know, play with some of those, you know, you saw Ryan Howard was there, who she played against last year at Kentucky, has played with on USA basketball teams before. And then obviously she's training with, you know, some of the best the W has to offer. You know, she wouldn't have crossed paths with Asia, the other kind of South Carolina icon on that team, since she was a little busy winning a WNBA championship. But, you know, there are just so many players there who I think gave her good learning experiences. And she's talked about that a little bit, just kind of how she was sort of absorbing everything while she was there and trying to kind of get a feel for what her life is going to be like next year for sure. But also just things to take into this year, you know, knowing that kind of everybody has her number now, you know, and she's, you know, the reigning player of the year for a reason. Obviously, as much as you can prepare for her, there, she's hard to stop. But at the same time, I think with the amount of national attention she had last year, she's a lot higher on everyone's radar, and on everyone's scouting reports. So I think it'll be kind of an interesting year for her to see whether she's able to recreate that success, just because a lot of times when you see a player break out, and not even that it was that much of a breakout, but, you know, have kind of explode onto the scene in that way, it's, you know, she is the focus of every team's game plan now going forward. So I think that it creates kind of a weird dynamic for her, because I think she'll be better than she was last year, but also I don't know that her numbers will necessarily reflect that. So I'm curious to see if teams can figure out a way to game plan for her, because I don't think that's off the table.
Yeah, I think it comes down to, it almost becomes like a double-ended sword, because it's like, can you try to stop Aaliyah Boston, and you're going to have to put a lot of energy and multiple players into trying to do that. But then, I mean, South Carolina is just so loaded and so big in general that it's like, okay, well, if you focus all your energy there, there's so many other pieces that can hurt you.
Yeah.
So it's going to be kind of very interesting to see kind of how teams choose to attack that situation.
Yeah, their size is crazy. I mean, they have my pick for kind of their, who I'm expecting to be sort of their breakout player this year is Camila Cardoso, who was, you know, kind of played second fiddle to Aaliyah last year because it's Aaliyah, but she's 6'7" and she's, you know, plays center. She's, you know, was incredible her freshman year at Syracuse before she transferred. So I think, you know, it'll end up, you know, they'll end up turning to some of those other bigs that they have, which, you know, there's no shortage. And so I think even if Aaliyah is being, you know, doubled and shut down, they have, you know, they can just pull her off the court and not really miss a beat, you know, which I think is one of the big things that makes them dangerous again this year.
Definitely. Do you think we'll see more too of this year, maybe of Cardoso and Boston on the floor together? We saw it, I think, minimally last year, but maybe with some of these new additions that they have got a little bit more guards to space the floor and make that happen.
Yeah, I would love to. I mean, I think it would be fun just with Aaliyah's, I think, like 6'5" is her, what she's officially listed at, and Camila's 6'7". So, I mean, that's kind of a wild duo to have on the floor at the same time in college basketball. But at the same time, their skill set is kind of similar in a lot of ways. So I think, you know, for Dawn, that's a lot of, you know, it's a good rotation option more so than to put them on the court at the same time. But I think it would be fun to see them on the court at the same time. If I was the coach for my pure entertainment value, I would put them on at the same time. But yeah, it's interesting. It would be cool to see, but I don't know how much we will actually see it.
Yeah, I think that's fair, especially because they have so much length at other positions. It's not like you're like need more length.
They're not desperate for size. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I feel like other than Destiny Henderson, they really pretty much bring back every key piece from last year's team. We've got, I mean, Bria Beal had a great season defensively last year. I think a player that maybe doesn't get the attention nationally, but is such a big part of this team. Zaya Cook, of course, too. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of how it all pieces back together with a lot of the same folks, though.
Yeah, they had a couple of those younger players transfer out, but other than that, I mean, all the starters are back except for Henny, and most of the backups who played significantly are back. So it's really, I mean, that point guard position is kind of the known. Everybody knows that's sort of what they're looking to fill right now, and I think there's still a lot of sort of questions with that, but at the same time, you know, I don't think they're going to have any problems filling it just with the depth that they have right now.
Yeah, they certainly have a lot of options. So that even if one option isn't working the way they hope, they've got other things that they could try and rotate and figure out. I thought it was interesting to see at Media Day that Dawn Staley talked a lot about kind of Zaya Cook filling in that role, which maybe wouldn't have been my first inclination of the player that was going to kind of step into that spot. Is that something you've kind of heard more about?
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that as well, just because, you know, she really didn't do too much. Like, that wasn't her role last year.
Right.
But we actually just chatted with some of the seniors the other day, and she said she's been, you know, taking a lot of time in that spot at practice and things. They honestly have a handful of options at that position. So I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised to see Zaya there kind of as the, you know, the week one starter at that spot. But Leticia, I'm gonna hear she rotated in with Destiny a little bit last year at point guard. And then they also have one of the redshirt freshmen returning, Raven. Oh my gosh, what's her last?
Johnson.
Yep, that's it. Hold on. But yeah, but with Raven back from the injury she had last year, she's an option there. And she was the number one point guard coming out of high school in that class. So, you know, obviously she has the ability to do it. And then too, with Kira Fletcher, the transfer from Georgia Tech, she is kind of also a potential option there. Both Raven and Kira are both coming back from long-term injuries. So that's the biggest question with them, which is why I would expect to see Zaya or LA in that starting point guard rotation in the first couple of weeks. But I would not be surprised at all if those other two started to rotate in later in the season.
Yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense, because with Zaya Cook, you're talking about a player that knows the system in and out, knows all these players. So especially with the other two coming off of injuries, it kind of makes sense that they would go in that direction to start off. But yeah, Kira Fletcher is a name that maybe was more what I was expecting to kind of see at that starting point guard position when they brought her in. And like you said, maybe we're going to see that more as the season goes on. But someone that was very successful in that role in the ACC at Georgia Tech, so yeah. It feels like a good fit there.
Yeah, I think with both her and Raven, they're in sort of that similar situation where, A, they're both learning the South Carolina system, obviously. What with Raven, I think she played two games last year before her injury, so she didn't get a ton of time in really, like, working with the team. And like I said, they're both coming off of really major injuries. And are, you know, fully recovered, but still, I think, getting back into the swing of things and of, you know, practicing full time and all of that. So I don't know how quickly they'll be up to speed. It could be faster than I'm expecting. It could be slower than I'm expecting. But with how front loaded South Carolina's non-conference schedule is, I would be a little bit surprised to see Dawn kind of take a chance there early on, just because, you know, if you put in someone who's not ready against Stanford or Maryland, you know, it's gonna come back to bite you.
Yeah, exactly. They do have a few really big games to kind of to start off the season, and those are the wins that become very important come March when you're talking about seeding and everything else. Not that I think anyone expects them to be anywhere other than the very top of the seed line, but those types of losses can kind of bite you later on, even if they are early in the season. So
yeah,
great. Speaking of kind of like newcomers and Fletcher, what about the freshmen? What have you heard from kind of coach and the team about how the freshmen are adjusting?
Yeah, it seems like it's a small group. I think there's only two of them, I believe, who are true freshmen. Talasia Cooper is the big one whose name has been thrown around a lot. I would not be surprised at all to see her play pretty significantly, honestly, just based on, obviously, she was a super, you know, highly ranked recruit. And so, you know, she's kind of the type that is going to be able to handle that sort of, you know, speed of the college game and all of that right away. The other one, and they also have needs at guard, and right. Cooper's a guard. And Ashlyn Watkins, the other freshman, is not a guard. She's, you know, another one of those post players who they just, it's unfortunate because obviously, you know, she's so talented, but at the same time, they don't need it right now, you know, that that's kind of the cool thing with this senior group that they have is it's, you know, all five of them have, you know, they were the five that came in the class of 2019 and all five of them have stayed through their college careers. So, you know, it's tough just with the amount of depth that they have to break into that group. You know, they have a starting lineup just in that senior class pretty yes. much. So yeah, I think she's someone, especially once that group graduates, you know, once you don't have someone like Aaliyah, I think we'll see Ashlyn in the next couple of years take on a bigger role. But this year I would be a little surprised to see her a lot. I think Cooper is a lot more likely to be kind of a more immediate impact player.
Yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense. We've hit on it a little bit, but there's just so much depth in that front court and what they bring back. And I mean, I think it's going to be hard to get all of the players that are seniors and have been a part of this team all the minutes that you would want to get them with the amount of talent they have in that group. So to add in the freshmen, but she does get the added advantage of learning from a class of really, really talented forwards.
Yeah, I mean, if there's anyone you're going to sit behind, Aaliyah Boston's not a bad option.
Yeah. You can't really pick someone better in the college game to be right. learning from in that position at the moment. Exactly. Maybe going a little bit more into that depth they do have, though, because we've talked about Boston and Cardoso, but we haven't really hit on Victoria Saxton. We talked about Leticia a little bit at the point guard position, but she's someone that definitely doesn't have to play at the one, can really play yeah. at a lot of different spots for this team. What have you heard from, I know Coach mentioned some things about playing LA at the 1-5 and just really using that length, but what do you kind of expect to see from them this season?
Yeah, LA kind of has been in a similar place to Aaliyah, honestly, just in terms of she was gone for a while. She was with Team Canada, actually went to Sydney at the World Cup. So she's just getting back with the team. And she also obviously has had a really difficult couple of months with lost her brother, I think a month or two ago. So I think a lot of it with her, and Coach said this, the first practice, you know, is just kind of letting her transition back in and get a feel for things again. But I mean, she is such an impact player anywhere on the court, and that versatility. And I think a lot of this group has that versatility. I mean, even just looking at someone like Zaya, who you wouldn't expect to play point guard, you know, even I think a lot of their depth comes from the fact that so many of their players can play anywhere. And I think that's, it's not necessarily a rare trait, but it's rare to have as many players who can do it as they do. And I mean, it's just such an advantage in even just disrupting like another team's game plan, you know, because when you're looking at film, if the player that you're expecting to line up somewhere is not lined up there, then that kind of, it really can change things. And so I think that's a huge advantage for them with both of those, with Saxon as well. You know, she is kind of a versatile forward. You know, she's only 6'2", so she's not that, you know, huge post center type player that you would look at there. She, you know, can go all over the place. She's kind of just a workhorse. She does what they need. And that's, yeah, I think that's a really unique trait of this team. You don't have those sort of set in stone, you know, you play here and you play here. They're all very, very flexible within that lineup.
Yeah, and it's obviously a great problem to have, and one that lets you to kind of game plan for what you're facing. You know, there's certain lineups that are going to probably trip up different teams differently. So being able to kind of use that flexibility to change what you have on the court, one, it makes it harder to scout, and two, it just allows you to really cater to who you're playing and the best way to beat that opponent night in and night out.
Yeah, and especially coming in with kind of the target that they have on their backs, you know, it having that kind of, you know, ability to move things around and ability to use different people in different places, in different lineups, you know, against different matchups and things like that, even, I think they can cater game plans so specifically to an opponent. And that makes it, you know, obviously repeating a title is hard. and that's something Coach has talked about a lot, is just, you know, they've obviously been in the situation where they tried to repeat and didn't in 2018 after that first title in 17. So, you know, I think they know that it's hard, but I think this team is set up just, you know, on paper in a way that makes it very possible. You know, it's not something where you look at it and you're like, you know, they're going to have a battle to get back, which, you know, obviously they are to some degree, but I think their odds are good just based on the weapons that they have.
Oh, for sure. I think they've, yeah, I think most people would probably say they have it easy, which obviously we know is not true. But like from the outside looking in, I think it is like very clear that this is the most talented team in the country going into the season. kind of on that theme of repeating, like obviously Aaliyah Boston is such a huge part of that. But who do you see like really needing to like step up or be a big impact player this year to for the, them to really get to that realization of repeating national champions?
Yeah, I think Bria Beal is the big one, honestly. And I know, you know, you mentioned her earlier, but I mean, she was so good for them defensively last year. And I think, you know, she's talked a little bit about, you know, wanting to be more involved on the offensive side and, you know, develop that side of her game. But at the same time, I don't, you know, I don't, she doesn't need to with the amount of scorers that they have. And, you know, if she does get more involved on the offense, I mean, that it immediately just raises her value so much. But at the same time, she is so valuable for them defensively. And that's something, you know, obviously you have Aaliyah whose rebounding is, you know, such a strength and all of that. But having someone who can just lock it down on defense like Bria can is such an underrated skill and an underrated, you know, weapon to have in your arsenal. And so I think, you know, it's that classic adage of like offense wins games and defense wins championships, but like it really is true at the end of the day, you know. And when you get into, you know, things like the tournament, like so much of it is just about getting through to the next round, and so much of that sort of scraping by mentality comes down to defense. And so I think she is going to be such an important player for this year. I think we're going to see more of her everywhere on the court, especially with Henny gone, you know, who was, you know, in her own right, or a really strong guard. So I think that's, she's the big one to me, who I think is going to kind of make or break them.
Yeah, for sure. I think a player that maybe doesn't get the recognition for it, but it has to be one of, if not the best one-on-one defender in the college game right
now.
And
it's tough because it's one of those things that it's like, you know, it just doesn't show up on a stat line. Right. You know, it's such an intangible thing to be good at defense. she has that, I mean, just coming out of her ears.
Yeah, I think if you like look back at like the national championship game last year and like what she was able to do to Paige Becker, it's something that not many people can do. Like, for sure. A really good example of just how good she is. kind of transitioning over to a little bit more just on the SEC as a whole. Obviously, always one of the best conferences in women's basketball, which helps prepare South Carolina to kind of stay at that high level going into March. But who do you see kind of as the teams within the SEC that are the biggest challengers to South Carolina this year? I know they're kind of runaway favorites, but
yeah, I honestly, and I've talked with a handful of the other SEC writers about this. I think it's maybe not as runaway as it looks like on paper, but there is a very clear a top tier. I think, you know, like they're, it's kind of the top three and then everyone else. And that top three is in order, South Carolina, Tennessee, and LSU. And then everybody else is just kind of a hodgepodge underneath that. It's a lot of good, not great under that, but it's a lot of just kind of, I think the challenging thing with the SEC this year is that there's so few teams that are, that you can kind of lean back on, you know. Even last year you saw they got beat, their only regular season loss was to Missouri, which like,
yeah.
And so that's like one of those, and I mean you saw they lost to Kentucky in the SEC tournament, who, you know, obviously are going to have a bit of a tougher year without Ryan Howard, but like there's so many teams that are competitive enough that if you're having a bad day they will take advantage of it. But I personally think Tennessee is clearly the second best team in the league and clearly their biggest threat. If you look at that preseason All-ACC vote by the media, it's 3 Tennessee players and 2 South Carolina players. So that's, I mean, I think tells you everything you need to know about just kind of how close those two are going to be this year. And when you look at last year, I think it's tough to see that just because that game was a real blowout last year when South Carolina played Tennessee. But that was, I believe that was the game right after Jordan Horston, who was their leading scorer, had a pretty major injury. I know that first game that she was out for was the game at South Carolina, which is not a game you want to be missing your best player for.
No.
and so the result was a blowout. But Horson's back healthy, and Tennessee slayed the transfer portal in the offseason. Yeah. I know we've talked a little bit about just like players I'm excited to see. I mean, Rekia Jackson, the transfer from Mississippi State, I think is going to flourish in that offense. They've got Tamari Keyback, who broke Candace Parker's all-time block record last year, which, you know, breaking a Candace Parker record is no small feat. So I think Tennessee is just so loaded. And similar to South Carolina, they're very deep. So I think they're like the clear number two to me. And then LSU is sort of the, I don't even want to call them a dark horse, but I feel like they sort of are, where everyone knows that they're the number three. But they could, I think, work their way up, and I wouldn't be surprised to see that. They're just, so much of their talent is from the transfer portal, which, you know, especially, you know, the big one is Angel Reese coming down from Maryland, which was a huge get for them. And so I think once that group can kind of acclimate and get a feel for each other, they're going to be super, super competitive. And I mean, you see like SEC play doesn't start until January. So they have plenty of time to get there. And I think come, you know, those regular season matchups and also come, you know, SEC tournament and NCAA tournament time, they're going to be a very, very real contender up against both Tennessee and South Carolina.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we're going to see maybe LSU take a little bit of a backseat to those two teams, at least as we go through non-conference start of the season. But once those pieces get a chance to gel, they do have a lot of talent on that team that they've been able to bring in. But I very much agree with you that Tennessee is like the clear kind of challenger for South Carolina, and that they're going to be that very obvious number two team. And I think it's a matchup when we get to it this season. I'm pretty sure it's very late in the season. It'll be a nice,
yeah, it's like late February, which is, I mean, their schedule, South Carolina's schedule is a beast. Because I think they go LSU, Tennessee back-to-back, I believe. I have to double check on that, but if they're not back-to-back, they're like within a week or two of each other. And I mean, they have that same thing at the beginning of the season with they go like Stanford, Maryland, UCLA back-to-back-to-back.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's brutal in some ways, but I think it's also, okay, yeah, I was almost correct. It's LSU, and then the following week is Tennessee. but I think that in some ways is good, you know, as they're prepping into tournament time, both SEC tournament and the national tournament, you know, that having that sort of grueling week after week is only going to help them when they hit that point.
Yeah, exactly. I think when you look at, you know, March, every game is like that. And very quickly it becomes every game is a big game. So having that grueling thing in February definitely prepares you for that. And then having something like Tennessee as part of your conference schedule in February, I mean, that's what
could ridiculous.
Be a Final Four game, basically, in February.
I would not be surprised to see it be a Final Four game. Yeah, I mean, exactly. I think Tennessee's, I think, 5 in the AP poll, and I think that's an underrating. I mean, I think they're going to be so good. I'm very, very high on Tennessee is this year.
This very well could be the year that Tennessee finally gets back to the Final Four. They're going to be at that level.
And I covered them a little bit last year I was in Knoxville last year before I was at this job, covering high schools, but then also helping out a little bit on whatever Tennessee sport needed an extra set of hands. And so I covered, I believe the big one I covered for them was their Stanford game. And so got to see just kind of a lot of the talent on that roster, which now obviously has just been elevated with, you know, Rekia and with Jillian Hollingshead coming in from Georgia. So, I mean, I think I have a lot of respect for Kelly Harper as a coach. I think that program is, you know, obviously has the history, but really is on the come up again right now. And I mean, if if a year is going to be their year, it's this one. And a lot of those players are seniors. So I think they know that this is kind of their chance to do it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we're going to see that urgency on the court as well. And yeah, looking back to that, like that South Carolina game too, I feel like just two teams with so much size too. There's probably not, maybe other than Stanford has a fair amount of size as well, but yeah, like many programs that are going to challenge South Carolina in terms of size that way. So that matchup, I think, is especially intriguing because of that as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's the game, I think, in the SEC. I mean, they've got, you know, their sort of grudge matches with Kentucky, with Missouri, right, but those, you know, especially Kentucky is not going to be, you know, necessarily the threat that it was last year just because of Ryan. But I think that Tennessee game is the one that most of them will have circled as kind of the climate check heading into tournament time.
Yeah, exactly. I think when you look at some of the teams that were so strong in the SEC last season, there's just a lot of talent that moved on to the W. You've mentioned Ryan Howard, also like Shakira Austin. Yeah. So it's just like there's a lot of, like you said, the top three, and then everyone else has got a little bit of rebuilding to do this year.
Yeah, and that game is in Knoxville this year, which adds kind of another layer because that is, you know, very similar to Columbia. It's very much a women's basketball town. and so that's, you know, their home court advantage is very real. And so I think that kind of adds an interesting layer too, because, you know, they were here last year, and I think they would rather have this year's Tennessee team at home than last year. Yeah.
agreed. But it also makes for a good test, I feel like, to try to go on the road and get that kind of win in February in that kind of environment. Like, being able to do something like that is a great barometer of, like, where you're at going into March.
For sure. And the nice thing is they're practically at home for a lot of the tournaments this year with, you know, I believe the SEC tournament's in Greenville. The NCAA tournament regional is in Greenville, which is about an hour from Columbia. So, you know, that's as close to home court advantage as they're going to get during the tournaments. So that's, I think, kind of I think that game is just such a good, you know, check on where they're at, or will be such a good check on where they're at, just because I almost think that game is harder than a lot of the tournament games will be.
Agreed. I mean, until you get to, like we said, it's a Final Four caliber opponent to begin with. So until you really get to the Final Four, they're probably not going to face a harder team in a harder environment than they will in that game.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, their only other game like that Tennessee game is that Stanford game, which is coming up in just a couple weeks now, I think. I think it's like end of November. And that's, you know, always a big one. They won that game last year, and they probably shouldn't have. and they were, that's another one that they were home last year for, and they are now in California this year, which obviously is almost in some ways more than Tennessee is a challenge, just because then you have to deal with flights and the time difference and all of that. Like it, there's a lot of extra layers just on the travel side of things with that. And I mean, I'm a huge Haley Jones fan. So I think, you know, that Stanford team also, you know, other than the Hulls, brings back most of their important pieces, you know, with Brink and with Haley Jones. And so I think that game in Tennessee are foils to each other in some ways, in that the Stanford game is a wellness check on the early season and the Tennessee game is a wellness check on the end. So I think that's the growth is going to happen in between those two. And I think if they beat Stanford, they're putting themselves in a good position. And if they lose to Stanford, they have a longer way to go in order to, you know, be able to get to Tennessee's level at that point at the end of the season.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's going to be a great kind of like barometer at the beginning of the season, which is always fun to watch.
Stanford as well. So I think that'll be interesting to see too, how that game goes, because, you know, if Tennessee beats Stanford and South Carolina loses, Tennessee jumps up pretty quick. And, you know, if South Carolina beats Stanford and Tennessee doesn't, then South Carolina hangs on to that number one spot, I think, you know, easily. Mm-hmm. So, and they've been in that number one spot. I mean, they're on a long streak now.
Yeah.
With that, I think they went wire to wire last season, and they were in that number one spot for a while the season before as well. I think we were talking about the other day, they've been ranked in every AP poll since like 2010 or 12, like just something ridiculous. So I think that just kind of that triad, and I think personally, I think those are the top three teams. I think it's Tennessee, South Carolina, and Stanford are kind of the upper echelon, at least coming into the preseason, and we'll get an early look at how that's going to shake out, which is cool.
No, those three games will kind of be very interesting. Let's see where things stand. And yeah, I feel like there's a very clear like one and two, like it's South Carolina at one and Stanford going into the season, and that three spot gets a little like, I don't know, there's a few names you could throw in there.
And that's, it's like the SEC too. I think the whole college landscape is like that. Like that upper tier is so clear to everyone. And then under that, it's just like a bunch of teams that can pull off upsets where you're like, you're not on that level, but like one bad day and you easily could be.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I think tournament time is going to be very, very fun this year.
I think we're going to see. I mean, we saw so many upsets last year, and I think we're just going to keep seeing that, which makes it fun.
For sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. This is great.
Yeah, thank you. This has been so fun.
And next up, we're here with Cora Hall, who's all things Tennessee women's sports, including women's basketball, at the Knoxville News Centennial. Hey, Cora, how's it going?
Hey, good. How are you?
Good. Excited to have you on to talk about Tennessee and the SEC. Definitely got an exciting season coming up and less than 2 weeks away now, which is super exciting.
Yes, definitely. Especially just the SEC as a whole. It's going to be super fun to watch. So I cannot wait.
Definitely. And I think Tennessee kind of at the top in the SEC this season, along with South Carolina. I mean, they're top five team in the AP poll coming out last week and picked second in the SEC. Kind of feels like they're returning to that national contender type status that we saw Tennessee in for so long, and maybe weren't quite there last year. So maybe want to talk a little bit about the start, just what makes this Tennessee team so much better than it was last year?
Yeah, I think it comes down to three things, and you know, you hear these a lot, but you know, it comes down to depth, versatility, and talent. I think the roster just has more of that in all three aspects. Like if you look at the depth, they have depth in the post with Tamari Key. She has a great backup now, or potential, you know, two posts with Jillian Hollingshead, who's 6'5", really dynamic forward from Georgia. And then you have, you know, Jasmine Franklin, you have Jordan Horson can even post up sometimes, but you know, you have other wings who can post up, like Justine Passat, like Rekia Jackson, Sarah Puckett posted up sometimes on smaller guards. So you have a lot of depth that can really dominate on the inside and create a lot of mismatches. You also have the deepest position they have is at the wing, because you have returners like Jordan Horson, like Marja Suarez, who was out last season. You have Sarah Puckett, again, really going to be a great player off the bench for them this season. And then you have Rekia Jackson, you have Kaya Wynn, Tess Darby. There's so many different looks at the wing they can have that is just going to give them a lot of options when it comes to matchups, when it comes to different teams that they're playing. And I think a great addition to their point guard depth is Jasmine Powell out of the transfer portal. She's also a true point guard, which is, you know, something they've really needed. So I think her presence alone will really elevate the offense this season, just with her decision-making, with her ability to push the pace and transition. I already in their scrimmage, which was just a scrimmage, but the way that, you know, this team can play very quickly in transition, especially with her at point guard, will I think really just elevate the offense that they had last season.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest thing that stands out to me from what they've picked up out of the kind of the transfer portal is just the amount of more
offensive firepower that they have compared to last year's team. It sometimes struggled a little bit on the offensive end, but like you said, they have a two-point guard, and then you also have Rekia Jackson and Jasmine Franklin that are both kind of proven volume scorers that really can help them on that end of the court.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too is they have a lot of elite rebounders. You know, they already had Jordan Horson, Tamari Key, and people from last year, but you know, you're adding players like Rekia Jackson, who's a great rebounder. Powell's a great, you know, rebounding guard. Jasmine Franklin was second in the nation in rebounding before she got hurt last season. So I think they just have so many. Wherever there was a lack of something last year, like, the coaches have filled it with these transfers. And especially, you know, Justine Passat is going to be very ready to make an impact as a freshman.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's probably not a team in the country that has done a better job of kind of filling their holes with these transfers as Tennessee has in this kind of offseason, really, I think, stands out.
Yeah, so it's just going to come down to, you know, managing minutes, keeping, you know, everyone. She says there's 16 players this season, which is the biggest roster they've had in so long, like years. So that's going to be a challenge for Kelly Harper, but I think, you know, it's a good challenge. I think it's one she's ready for. And I think, you know, if she can make that all work, then they will be a title contender.
Definitely. I think the other thing that stands out about this team is just the level of experience we've got in the transfers, you know, experience, and then especially in Horston and Tamari Key, two seniors that have been with this program for a while. We've kind of touched on them a little bit already, but just what have you heard to kind of expect from them in their senior season and ways that they've made strides forward in their own games coming into their final year?
Yeah, I think, you know, Kelly's been really high on Jordan Horson. You know, she said had a great summer. And last season, when Kelly said that Jordan Horson had a great summer, it led to a great season. So, you know, from my conversations with Jordan, you know, I think she, you know, with conversations with their athletic trainer, you know, her progress ever since she got fully cleared in May has been exponential. Like, she is healthy. She's ready to go. She's been, you know, working really hard this summer, because something that was interesting to me, like, obviously last year she had a breakout season, and, you know, she felt like people saw her, you know, like the country could see her. You know, she was doing what, you know, everyone expected her to do since she was the number two recruit in her class. So, you know, that's highly motivating for her to go finish what she started. And, you know, she also is going to have less on the ball responsibilities with Jasmine Powell. And I think that's going to relieve some pressure from her, because I think last year when she would have, you know, turnovers, or when she was, a lot of it I felt like was, you know, when she was at point guard, the pass was almost a really great pass, right? It was just sometimes doing a little too much. So now that she doesn't have as much of that on her, and she can be off the ball more, she can be, you know, just more focused on scoring, I think that's going to really help her too. As far as Tamari Key, I think she'll take more steps this season, just like she did last. I think Joy McCorvey has done a lot of great things for her and her development, and I expect to, you know, see her take steps, especially competing with Jillian Hollingshed all summer. She didn't have someone that was basically, you know, her size, who, you know, she had to compete with every single day last season. Now she has that, and I think she'll still be that anchor for the starting lineup. But I do expect to see, I guess, more consistent offensive production, since it's not all on her. She has more depth. So again, less pressure on her to not be so focused on, okay, don't foul, I have to be on the court. So she can have a little more freedom too. But yeah, I think both those two will have a really strong season again and be really important for just carrying over the success, because they have been here for 4 years. They know the expectations. They know just what got them there last year. So they can really help carry over that success.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's exciting to kind of see what this team can do this season. Obviously, a lot of hype coming into the season, and I think hype that's earned. So it'll be exciting to see kind of if they can sustain that and really be amongst the top teams kind of throughout the year, which I think they definitely have the talent to do it. So hopefully it will all come together in that way. Kind of talking about this team in the context of the SEC, obviously they're picked second in the preseason SEC poll, but kind of where do you see them falling? You've kind of got a clear, I feel like, number one in South Carolina, and then I feel a pretty clear number three in LSU as well, and then kind of everywhere else. But kind of amongst that top group, do you see this team kind of being up there with South Carolina and contending for a title, or maybe closer to like LSU and everywhere else?
Yeah, I think when it comes to like SEC title, I think I don't think Tennessee is that far behind South Carolina on paper, because I think, you know, they went out and they got the size, they got the talent to match up with them. I think it's a matter of how they progress, right? Because South Carolina, they won a title last year. They returned a lot of their players. So they've been through this. They know what they're doing. They're seasoned. Whereas this team on paper has the talent, has the size to compete with that, but they aren't battle tested together yet. So I think it will definitely, I think that the non-conference slate will really help that. Kelly put together a great schedule. So I think when SEC play comes around, they will be ready. And I think it's just going to come down to when it comes to February, that last push of the season when they're playing South Carolina, where are they at? Have they made enough progress to compete with South Carolina to make that a game that they either should win or that they can win? So I think a lot of it kind of is up in the air of seeing how they progress through non-conference play. But I think, again, like on paper, that should be a very competitive game. Like I think that's going to, you know, decide the regular season title. And that's a big deal to Don Staley. So you best believe, like, even though it's at Tennessee, like they will bring like everything, they will be ready for that game. That is their goal. So I think it's really exciting to see just how every team develops. I think LSU is not a given win for either South Carolina or Tennessee, just with the transfers they brought in, with what Kim Mulkey did with the team last season. So I think like that top three will be, all those games against those top three teams are going to be great games. And I think, you know, I think those are solidly the top three teams of the SEC. I do think, you know, Tennessee and South Carolina will come out on top against LSU just because of the depth that they have. But yeah, I think LSU is a close third behind Tennessee.
Yeah, I think a team that has obviously brought in a ton of talent is going to be kind of part of that top group. And you mentioned the non-conference schedule, and I think that's something. I mean, Tennessee, I know they have Stanford, they have UConn kind of later in that non-conference slate. So they're going to have a lot of tests kind of leading up to that South Carolina game too, to get a sense of where this team is at compared to that kind of elite tier of teams.
Yeah, yeah, especially, you know, they're going to be at Battle for Atlantis too. So they could possibly play Texas, Louisville. And they have, you know, Indiana, they have, you know, UMass, who's, you know, projected to win the Atlantic 10. So they have a lot of great challenges leading up to SEC play.
Yeah, that UMass game should actually be interesting. I think people probably will overlook that one and the other games that you said, but that's UMass. A really good UMass team.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that one's soon as well, so kind of early on.
Yeah, that's a November game, so.
Yeah. So that should be a good chance to see this team against what could, I think, at some point be a top 25 team this season. Kind of looking at the rest of the SEC, we've kind of covered that, you know, South Carolina, Tennessee, LSU is that definitely title kind of favorite group, the group that's going to be at the top. But are there any other teams kind of in this mix that stick out as maybe just being a tough matchup for Tennessee? In the way that they play, or kind of could be exceed expectations this season?
Yeah, even though Florida lost Sippy Broughton, which like sucks because she was going to be such an important piece for them coming back, I still think Florida has, you know, a really good chance at making noise in the SEC just based on the success they had last season. They brought in great transfers. You know, I'm excited to see Aaliyah Matharo back in the SEC. And Kelly Ray Finley proved herself last season, certainly. So I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, will Florida kind of still rely on that really tough, scrappy style of play that got them wins last season, that got them a win against Tennessee. And I think it'll be interesting to see how Tennessee handles the turnover problem this year. You know, how will they fix that? You know, will it be a problem again? I don't know. You know, I think a lot of it just kind of depends on what we're seeing from them. But last year, that's what got them into trouble, is that turnover problem caught up to them. And against Auburn, against Florida, it turned into a lot of points and upsets. So how will they handle that? I think one of the common things in their losses last year was there was one quarter when defensively they weren't strong enough and teams put up over 20 points in a quarter. Like LSU put up 22 in the first quarter by pushing the pace, running the floor, and Tennessee never caught back up. They lost by three. Against Stanford, Stanford had 26 points in the second quarter, I think, and they just couldn't overcome that, you know? And UConn did it, 23 points in the third, South Carolina 25 points in the third. So it's just, can they play those four quarters with the defense they need to? Because once they had that quarter, they never, you know, could get back the lead, and they lost those games. So I do expect them to be stronger defensively this year. So, you know, maybe last year's problems won't be what gets them this year. But that certainly last year was kind of the common denominator in those losses in SEC play.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And some of that will probably get alleviated with just having more depth, being able to give people rests and kind of helps force not taking time off on the defensive end when people can actually get a break off the court. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of if those things come back to bite them at all. I think the turnover is another one that could be interesting. There is maybe Georgia, just with the kind of, they're brought in the coach from UCF, like that UCF has always played that very, very physical, grinded out type matchup, which is something Tennessee is very much accustomed to and able to play, but it's always can just get things, keep things interesting.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you said that, because I'm pretty sure the game between Tennessee and UCF last season, like, it was ugly. Like, it was an ugly win. I'm pretty sure there was 52 combined turnovers between the both teams. Like, I think each team had like 25, 26 turnovers. Like, it was just so bad. But yeah, I think Georgia will be really interesting to see how that team shapes up.
Yeah, I feel like they've got a decent amount of kind of what was on that UCF team, on that Georgia team now. Diamond Battles is there. Brittany, I'm forgetting her last name, but their center, I think, came over as well. So it should be interesting to kind of see what the Georgia squad looks like.
Yeah, and Audrey Warren from Texas, really gritty, tough defender, gets a lot of hustle plays, great scorer, when, you know, can muscle her way to the basket. So she'll be a great piece for that team as well.
Definitely. I guess just kind of looking a little broader at the SEC, outside of maybe some of the teams that we've mentioned already, is there any kind of teams or players that you're just excited to see this season, maybe kind of outside of that top three, but...
Yeah, no, I think what's exciting is just there was a lot of movement in the offseason. And I think coaches who proved themselves last season, like Kyra Elzey, like Coach Yeo, like Kelly Ray Finley, they hit the portal and they got themselves some more players. They have, you know, Kyra Elzey has a great freshman class. So I think I'm very excited to see what they do, because, you know, obviously they kind of have to reload. They lost some key players. But I'm really excited because I feel like those coaches really proved themselves last season within SEC play. And so I think, you know, they'll once again have a solid season. And I'm really excited to see how that plays out, because there's so many new faces. The other thing is there's a lot of new coaches. Coach Abe at Georgia, Joni Taylor went to Texas A&M, and Sam Purcell at Mississippi State. So I'm also very interested to see how those new coaches do, because this is going to be a very hard conference this season. And, you know, being a new coach in the SEC is not something that I would ever want to do, especially with, you know, two potential title contending teams. But I think those coaches will all do, you know, good things for those programs, especially Sam Purcell at Mississippi State. Like, that program really needed a reset. And I think, you know, he was a great coach with Jeff Walls at Louisville. So I'm excited for that. In regard to players, I'm obviously looking forward to seeing Aaliyah Boston, and I'm excited to see what Zaya Cook does this year. I'm excited to see Matharu back in SEC. I'm excited to watch Angel Reese and Flajay Johnson. Speaking of which, there's a lot of really good freshmen, like Janiyah Barker, like Justine Passat, Ashlyn Watkins, Talaysia Cooper. So I think there's a lot of young talent across the league that I'm very excited to watch. And lastly, I meant to mention this earlier, but I really think, you know, Jillian Hollingshead is going to be a difference maker for Tennessee. And I feel like she's kind of flying under the radar, because she didn't play that much last season at Georgia due to illness, due to a knee injury. So I think she is going to be a much bigger impact player than people are expecting, especially just – with the way she handles the ball, with the way she can shoot from range, her post moves. Yeah, so I'm excited to see her too.
Yeah, definitely. I think a name that like rings bells in most people's head, but like you said, she didn't have like this standout season last year, so easy for people to kind of underrate her a little bit. I feel like that might be true of a handful of teams in the SEC too, just with so much movement. I think maybe some of these teams are flying under the radar because they don't have like this big name that people remember from last year. But still going to be one of the, I think, the toughest conferences in the women's game this year. It's kind of your take on that. I know a lot of attention right now is going to the ACC, but do you kind of see the SEC being right up there with the ACC this season?
Yes, definitely. I think it was funny because when I was doing like my AP top 25 preseason ballot, like I only had three SEC teams, and I was like, I feel like there should be more, but it's like hard to rank like an Ole Miss when they don't have Shakir Austin this year. It's hard to rank a Florida when they lost their two best players from last year. Even though I think those teams will be good, I think they're going to be good in the SEC. I think they'll make some noise. I think they will be good, like challenging games for the top teams. So I think more SEC teams will play their way into the top 25. But it's just such a tough conference because of the style of play. Like these teams are so physical. They're so fast. And I think everyone embraces that identity of the league that it is good top to bottom. Anybody can win on any night. Like you literally saw Auburn beat Tennessee last season when they should not have beat them. So it's just like, I think the ACC is really, really strong this year, but I still think, you know, the SEC is right there, even if there's not as many ranked teams at the moment, because again, every team knows that they can beat the top team on any night.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think that's the thing that maybe gets missed sometimes is the top to bottom strength that, you know, the number 12 team in the league is going to be able to give someone at the top a hard time. Whereas the ACC, I think it's very top heavy right now. And there's a lot of really strong teams at the top, but maybe the bottom isn't as close as some of the teams in the SEC are to kind of the top.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I do think, though, that the UConn-Tennessee team game will be very interesting this year. I think last year it was looking like it was going to be interesting, and then these injuries happened. Then I was like, okay, like this might be kind of a weird matchup now. But I think this season I'm really excited. I'm really excited to see, you know, how UConn progresses through the season. I'm excited to see how Tennessee progresses through the season. And I think there will be like a lot of interest around that game come February.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, which is exciting. I think this is the first one that's like in Knoxville, not during COVID, right? So it's like, finally.
Yes, because I think the one in 21 was in Knoxville, so that was still like that season after COVID.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that'll be exciting, and that like you finally get that kind of UConn Tennessee rivalry fan experience as well. So that's definitely a game to look forward to, and like you said, two teams that I think are going to be interesting to follow this year and how they develop and come January when they actually play. That should be a really exciting one.
Yeah, no, because I still think, I mean, UConn's still going to be good without Paige. Like, I think it's funny when people are like, oh, they don't have Paige. Like, I'm like, did you not watch them last year?
Yeah, it is funny. Like, yeah. They played a lot of last year without Paige, too.
Yeah. AZ's going to be super fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see that. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Cora, for doing this.
Yeah, of course. It was so super fun. I love podcasts, so always happy to join.
Well, that's all for today's episode. Thank you for listening. As always, please make sure to rate, like, subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to or watching us. Also, be sure you are subscribed to the Stat site. It is just $20 a year to get all of the best NCAA and WNBA stats out on herhoopstats.com. Also, be sure you're subscribed to our free newsletter on Substack and following us on social media at Her Hoop Stats on all platforms. Thanks again for listening. Whoa.